Very good morning to you. Welcome into today's programme. There's an amazing story in today's Irish Independent. We're going to the author of that story very shortly. Stay tuned. It's to do with social housing and more. Stay tuned. Today also we're looking at somebody who was targeted in relation to €10,000 taken out of her account. Today also we're looking at new pain relief coming the way from University Hospital Galway. The consultant in question joins us. This is a game changer when it comes to people and having pain and nerve pain as well. Ishgeirin joins us. They're asking us to consider water. That and much more between now and 12 midday. Plus a giveaway in association with the Ardalone Hotel. That and more. Do stay with us. A very good morning to you. We talk extensively on this program about social housing and the lack of social housing and or otherwise. But Gabby Gatvate joins me on the line. She's a political reporter with the Irish Independent. And when I read her article today on the front page of the Irish Independent, I scratched my head because over 5,000 offers of social housing were refused in the past 2 years with a variety of reasons given. And the Irish Independent have analysed the whole thing today. And Gabia is the one who is responsible for it, and she joins me on, the line. Gabia, good morning to you.
Good morning to you.
Thanks for joining us today. There's every excuse under the book, except that I forgot my lunch in this one. It is quite an amazing read today.
Well, you're very kind, and I appreciate that. But look, it took, I think a week or two to pull it all together. But basically, I looked at every county around the country, and I asked the councils what were their, how many offers did they make for social housing, and what were their numbers on refusal. Now, a few of them have ignored me, but I do have the vast majority of the data. So over the past 2 years, 2021 and 2022, there was about just under 25,000 offers of social housing made, and just over 5,000 of those were refused. So I might maybe give your listeners a little bit of an insight. I do have the figures for Galway City. In 2021, there was 395 offers, 63 refusals, and then last year, 258 offers and 34 refusals. So really quite interesting, because I also got the number or the reasons for these refusals. And I think it's important to say that, look, you know, if you're on a council waiting list, you're waiting for a house, you know, you're not going to turn down any home without solid reason. And, and there are some very valid reasons given. For example, you know, maybe the house is doesn't have enough bedrooms for the children. Maybe it's too far away from the school. Maybe it's too near the main road for a small child. Lack of public transport in the area. The housing estates are deemed undesirable, or maybe there's antisocial behaviour. Perhaps the tenant has medical needs, and you know there's not a bathroom on the, there's not a toilet on the ground floor. Some of the other more interesting reasons are, you know, the house is too close to an ex-partner. Now that also may be very valid in domestic abuse situations. Of course, I think Kerry Council gave me really quite interesting reasons. They're saying, you know, there's no shed. The tenant has a motorbike. There's nowhere to put the motorbike. The tenant has, you know, a dog that's been listed as dangerous under the legislation. And even though the house allows pets, it doesn't allow the keeping of the dangerous dog. So they've turned down the house offer. Also, a very common reason is, you know, there's no garden, or that the property that's being offered is an apartment or a duplex and not a house.
And were you surprised at some of these? Because, I mean, I would have thought, I mean, certainly with the figures that you've given us there for 395 and 258 for Galway City, I mean, that's a significant amount of homes being allocated and homes being given to people that could be up to 10, 15 years on the list. And then something trivial like not a big enough bedroom and or otherwise, now I can get the ex-partner due to what you've just outlined, but it seems to me trivial in the scheme of things.
Well, some of the reasons perhaps may seem trivial. I spoke to academic Rory Hearn, who is, of course, a housing campaigner also.
Yeah.
And I asked him, you know, what might be some of those reasons, and what are the reasons behind those reasons? And he said, look, if a tenant says, you know, the house is too is in the area that I don't like the area, it's too far away from my family. Perhaps privileged people, it might be difficult for us to understand that. But, you know, a lot of the time, people who are on the council waiting list are recipients of social welfare, and they may need their family support. Yeah. And so, you know, if the house is, you know, too far away from their family and their support network, it may pose challenges to them. So I suppose when you know, when you have all the reasons written down, I think it's just interesting to see that insight as to what's, because I mean, 5,000 offers is really quite a significant amount. And I also think it's important to say, you know, if a house is offered, it doesn't necessarily mean that it's standing there empty. You know, it is offered to somebody else. But the way that it works with refusals is that I believe over a 12-month period, you can make one, you can only make one refusal, but if you make more than one, then you're suspended or from the list, council waiting list for 12 months, and then you also may lose your rent supplement as well. So, you know, the refusal, you have to have a serious reason for, or certainly the person who's refusing it, you know, has to think, okay, this is a really quite, the reason has to be a big challenge for them, basically, is what I'm trying to say. Yeah.
Now, you got the numbers from Galway. City Council, did you not get the numbers, or were they not into you when you were going to press from Galway County Council?
I didn't have Galway County Council. There was a couple of counties that I just didn't have. I think there was five or six perhaps that didn't get back to me. But I think for most majority of the country, you know, the offers that are being made are, and even though we hear conversations around, you know, we need to build more public housing on public land, you know, if you have a look at the graphic in today's Indo, it's really quite significant. I mean, there's hundreds of offers that are made every single year. And I think that's also a positive as well, that councils, you know, they are refurbishing properties. They do have stock, and they are offering it out to people, and they're attempting to house people. We also know that the numbers on the waiting lists, they are much smaller nowadays than what they used to be, you know, even 7 years ago. They are significantly shorter. I think it's about a third that they're shorter than they used to be compared to 2016. Yeah. So I think that shows effort from the councils as well.
It does, but it makes sense, Gabby, because if somebody's on HAP and they're entitled to their HAP, if they're in a social housing, or if they're being allocated one of these 25,000 we're talking about today, it means that from one side there's a reduction because it's owned by the council, and the rent then is appropriate from there. So there's a saving for the government. The more of these houses that come on stream quickly, there is a saving for the government ultimately.
Yeah, absolutely. Of course, we know that it is better value for the state to house people in council housing instead of paying out the likes of HAP. I think we spent about $1 billion a year in rent supports. You know, so I think, look, I think it's interesting to see the figures today, that they're really quite, the figures are there, and the housing is being given out. I suppose the other side of it is, you know, 5,000 is an average of 1 in 5 are being refused. You know, perhaps the housing is not adequate, perhaps it's not suitable for people, and maybe it's more of it that we need, but maybe it's also a different kind of housing that we should be building too.
Absolutely. It's a fascinating, pick up the indoor, go online and buy it online if you want to from there. But it's a fascinating story, and the graph says it all, and the figures say it all. Now, don't jump to flipping conclusions like a lot of people do, saying, oh, they're just not accepting them for the sake of it. That's not the case. Gabby has given us adequate information as to why people may refuse. If you're away from family and you are on low income and you need the family's help, there's no point of being in Newcastle and getting a house out in Joishka. You know, it makes reality from there. Gabby, thanks for joining us today, and have a good
Many
and safe
thanks.
Day. Are you in Dublin Castle today for that forum?
I have to see yet. I'll have to talk to my editors and see will I venture out. I will say it's very humid here today, so, you know, whoever's out today, I do feel sorry for them. I'm not sure if the sun is out, but it's just very, very humid.
Well, listen, it ain't that humid down here, and we're waiting for rain, so we are. Gabby, thank you indeed for joining us today. Further details can be had, by the way, today's Irish Independent. Or go to independent.ie and get further details from there as well. Some of the comments coming into us already today, and I knew you would be giving out about this. Keith, some on the housing list want a brand new house in a brand new estate. Why not offer them to the Ukrainians or asylum seekers, if that's the case from there? And Keith, it's all well known that loads of people refuse social housing, and I'm always surprised you don't discuss it more with the politicians that you interview about the lack of housing. Another issue that needs to be sorted out is the fact that people on HAP don't have their rate reviewed when they find work. Sometimes they're earning big salaries and they're still on HAP from there. And other calls coming into us as well. Quick commercial break. We're back just after these. Comment lines are all open. And we have a lady coming up next who was scammed and badly scammed. And did I say badly, badly scammed? Horrendous stuff, to be quite honest. But stay tuned for that and more to come.
Galway Talks, in association with Tesco. Click and collect allows you to collect your order whenever suits you.
Hey, everybody, good morning to you. Welcome into today's programme. Lots of calls coming in, by the way, in relation to social housing and people not. Keith, this caller said, what is wrong with people in the Newcastle area going to a house on the east side of the city? It ain't Australia, you know. No, it's not. Anyway, let me give you a chance to win today. We're giving away a lovely prize to celebrate the wonderful wedding showcase in the Ardalon Hotel in Taylor's Hill this coming Saturday from 10 a.m. until 5 p.m. And the Ardalon Hotel are holding their wedding showcase this Saturday from 10 a.m. to 5 p.m. And on the day, you can meet their experienced wedding team and view their stunning venue and bridal suite as well. You can book an appointment by calling Zara on the following number, 091-519-703. So that's 091-519-703. So we have a prize up for grabs today. It's one winner on Friday of a luxury one-night stay in the bridal suite with full Irish breakfast, along with dinner in the Camelon restaurant for two guests, full use of the Ardalon Leisure Club facilities, your stay and direct access to the stunning gardens as well, use of bathrobes and slippers and welcome plates and Prosecco and the whole lot. And the Ryan family and their extended Ardalon family will look after you like royalty. And the prize is valued at €500. Now, you can log your entries each day and we'll pick one winner on the Friday. So today, you have to text us the word bride. For Monday, text us the word bride and do so to 086 38 33 55 3. That's 086 38 33 55 3. Text us or WhatsApp us to that number. Free of charge, and you could be in with the chance to win. So good luck to the team in the Ardalon Hotel this coming Saturday, June the 17th, 10 a.m. to 5 p.m. But if you want to book an appointment, Zara is on 091-519-703. Alice Coyle joins me on the line, and Alice is from Clifton, and I was reading her story indeed over the weekend, and she received a text message from what she thought was Electric Ireland telling her that her account was overdue. Alice joins me on the line today. Alice, good morning to you.
Good morning, Keith. How are you?
We've all got these texts. I got one last week telling me that my account was overdue and I don't even have a flipping account with the person in question. But there you go. What happened to you then?
Well, those texts are everywhere. And, you know, I'm blue in the face telling my mum and everyone around me not to click on the link. But I was working at my desk and I was busy and kind of getting through jobs, and I got that text from Electric Ireland, and beside me on the desk was the Electric Ireland bill I'd received the day before, and I did actually need to update my details. In fact, I still need to. But I thought, I'll just get this done, you know. So the text came in, I was distracted, and I thought, oh God, this is a job that needs to be done, I'll just do it. So I clicked the link and I put in my details, the account they asked for, it brought me to an Electric Ireland website.
Yeah.
I put in my account, my name and address and email and stuff, and then it moved to a Revolut page. And I thought, that's strange. Usually Revolut only happens in the Revolut app. But I looked at the URL at the top and it said revolutonline.com or something quite, you know, legitimate looking. So I put in my Revolut payment details, passcode, everything, the works. And I put down the phone, forgot all about it, got back to work. And I thought, that's job's done, you know. So nothing, the penny didn't drop or anything until the phone rang and it was Revolut. It was a guy called Andrew, Irish accent, and he says, good morning, this is Andrew from Revolut. I'm just doing a security check. I'm not going to ask you for any of your banking details on this call, and this call will be recorded for, you know, training and purposes and all that kind of stuff they normally say at the start of these calls. And he said, there's been a login, an attempted login to your account. I said, yeah, no, that's fine. That's me just paying the bill. And they said, well, he said, why, how did Electric Ireland contact you? And I said, well, it was a text message. And he said, was there a link? And when he said link, my brain started to go, oh, Jesus, what have I done?
Yeah.
So I, you know, my brain started panicking then. But he said, look, there's three attempts at €5,000 each on your virtual card. And I went, no. And there was all sorts of expletives I probably can't say on the radio. And he said, we can reverse these payments. It's no problem. Just, you know, stay in the line. And he said, don't panic. This is happening all the time at the moment. And we're flat out in Revolut trying to address these scam artists. They've become so sophisticated. And I said, okay. He said, look, we just need to go through this. It'll be quick enough. And so first thing you'll get is an authorization request in the app. And I said, okay, yeah, it's there. And he said, okay, well, you have to authorize it in order for me to reverse it. And I said, okay, that's a bit strange. But so I press the button. Now I'm in complete panic at this stage. And I would have done anything Andrew said, because I was just thinking about how stupid I was.
Yeah.
And how I cannot, like, did I actually just fall for this scam? Like, and how can I undo this? You know, that was all I was thinking. I could barely even hear what he was saying.
And Alice,
so I clicked the link.
Was Andrew definitely Revolut?
Well, that's the thing, you see. This was the 10 grand later, and he was asking me to authorize the third batch of €5,000. And I started getting paranoid then. And I said, look, I'm really sorry, Andrew, but I'm actually starting to wonder if, you know, do I need to make sure you're real? Because this feels very strange, like watching the total go down by €5,000. I was getting very uncomfortable. And I said, look, I'm actually not going to authorize the third one. If you don't mind, I really need you to prove this is legitimate before I go ahead. And so anyway, at that stage, when I asked too many questions, he hung up, and I realised that Andrew was not Revolut. He was also the scam.
But how in the name of all this good and holy do they have, how do they have your mobile number?
Oh, sure. Like your mobile number is...
Should they send you the text?
All this data is sold to criminals online, you know, so my phone number isn't precious or private by any means, you know, at this stage.
Yeah.
It's easy to get.
So he got the first 5,000. What happened then?
He got the second 5,000 as well. And by the third 5,000, he had asked too many questions. He said, oh, no, it's no problem. I completely understand. I'll get my supervisor to phone you now, or I can send you a text message now. And I said, no, that doesn't really prove anything. I think I need, you know, maybe you could email me. And he said, yeah, no problem. You can email support@revolut.com. And I took out my Gmail and I was about to email him. And I was still, you know, panicking and not really knowing which way is up. Because when I started to question if he was real, it was like, oh, this is too much to even compute. What the hell? Like, of course he's real. Like, he's from Revolut. He's saving my ass. I'm the one who made the mistake, you know? But then I was like, but what if he isn't? And there was a third €5,000 at stake, because if I didn't do what Andrew said, the criminals would get it. But what if Andrew's not real? And there was a time pressure. So how do I prove Andrew is real? And I was racking my brains. How do I prove he's real? I asked for his phone number. He said, oh, well, you'll see it's a private number because we're a bank. And he went into a long spiel about why banks use private numbers. And I was, you know, so eventually, anyway, he couldn't answer all the questions. But he was so good. I mean, he was chatting away to me. At one stage, he said, you'll probably get a text message from them now, the scam artists. And I was like, I looked at my phone and there was a text message from Revolut within the Revolut thread, you know?
Mm.
And I said, no, I just got a text from you, from Revolut. And he said, actually, no, that's the scam artists. You you couldn't be up to them. Don't click the link in that, whatever you do, don't. That's fake. And I went, oh my God, you know what I mean? So I was actually bamboozled. It was kind of old school con artistry. Like, he was very good. He got me confused, stressed, worried, embarrassed, everything
all at once.
And I needed him to save the day, so I would have done anything. And it was only towards the end, I could, you know, just watching the money going down in front of my eyes, I was like, oh Jesus, this doesn't feel right, you know. But what do? I need to trust Andrew. He's going to fix this, you know?
Can I pause you there? Can you just imagine older people getting calls like this and how easy it is to be scammed? I mean, I got a call here, so I did, to do with our own account. But it was twigged. They twigged it. But they twigged it early on, so that a card had been compromised.
Yeah.
And so they rang my wife and said, listen, this is what's after happening. And cute enough, she said, and how do I know that you're from AIB? Lovely guy, do that. Yeah. Well, he said, what I want you to do is, I want you to cut up the card and go down the black line and cut it down the black line. And then I want you to cut through the little thing that's on the front of the card, on the laser card or whatever you call it, and cut that up, he said, and we'll post you out a new one. And he was just, apparently he was the most beautiful, friendly young man. He was from AIB and he was from the call centre and he was excellent at what he did. But I can just imagine other people getting caught. Mm. Like you. So where is it? Yeah. What happened then after that? Or have you any comeback anywhere? Or are you just out now? 10,000?
No, I'm just cut loss, like cut free. Revolut just did not deal with me. They have an in-app chat bot, and that's the only way they'll talk to customers is through that. And so for 8 hours after this happened, I was in pieces trying to get through to a human and trying to communicate with various staff members who changed shift and repeated themselves. And then there's all this AI generated terms and conditions, and here's our policy, and we're so sorry this happened to you, and we can understand how distressing this must be for you, but essentially no, it's your fault, you authorized the payments and that's it, so have a nice day. Like, they literally tried to wrap up the conversation about six times, and each time I said, no, this isn't okay, good enough. This is a crime happening right now, and you're not dealing with me. So I did the formal complaint procedure, they got back with me again, it was like 10 pages long of repetitive stuff, but essentially they said, no, we've looked at your complaint, and, you know, we care about our customers so much, but no, have a nice day.
If somebody went into your home in Connemara, and you had 5,000 on the top of one desk and 5,000 on the other, and they stole one of those, or if they stole 50 of it, the Gardaí would be all over it like a rash, because that's your money and it's theft. Surely to God, they would know exactly, Revolut, where the money from your Revolut account went to, and if by banking laws, they could get onto the operator and get that money reversed.
Yeah, well, there's a couple of things that they've kind of covered themselves, because they said, look, you authorized it.
I get that.
So it's like the criminal came to my door and I handed out the 5,000 euros to them.
Yeah,
that's the kind of equivalent. Now, it's a known type of fraud. And in the UK, they have a name for it when people get scammed, lied, you know, tricked into this, and they give you back the money. But in Ireland, we don't have any policy like that, so the banks don't have to deal with me. The guards then, frustratingly, don't have a phone number for anybody in Revolut either. So the local Clifton guards, they have to email just like a customer and wait for Revolut to come back, like, you know, after it was coming up to the bank holiday weekend, so like Tuesday, this had happened on a Wednesday. So, you know, this is a bank in Ireland with hundreds and thousands of customers and millions in euros, and the guards can't talk to them.
They can't deal with them.
So they do have the information. They can track where it went. But then for me, you know, I asked the guards, is there not like a special fraud unit for this kind of stuff? And basically I was too small. 10 grand isn't enough for the fraud department to be dealing with me.
So are you out the 10 grand?
Am I what?
Are you finished? Is that it? You're gone. Your 10 grand is gone.
I think it's gone. I'm going to keep shouting about it. I have to go to the ombudsman next. And I'm going to do my best to keep like trying to get through to a human or somebody who knows somebody, and I'm going to keep shouting about it, because since this has happened, I've had an unbelievable response. People contacting me and saying, first of all, you know, I'm so sorry this happened to you, and second of all, this happened to me or my friend or my mum or my dad, and here's what happened. And so many people don't report it because they feel embarrassed, and they don't talk about it because they think they got fooled. You know, they were stupid. Yeah. And that just to realize that this crime is happening, people are losing their life savings or their hard earned, you know, summer wages. There was one student, and it's just awful. And they've nowhere to go. There's no comeback. There's nothing to do in Ireland. Nobody takes any responsibility. You know, I did give the money away. I was fooled and I did lose the 10 grand.
And you did authorize it.
I really think there needs to be somewhere for me to go. And you know, there is a way of tracing that money, but I don't know where to go with it now. And Revolut, I feel, have to take more responsibility. They're minding our money for us, you know, and they're putting all of the risk on top of the customer. Everybody will have received, any Revolut customers there will have received an email in the last week or two, reminding them about fraud and scam and how to mind, be careful. So basically, it's up to us to make sure our money is safe with them.
In certain circumstances, the main pillar banks, be it Bank of Ireland, AIB, or Permanent TSB, they would automatically, it might take a week or two, but they would automatically, the way they handle it, have that back in your account again, and that if figured it out as to where it went to and tried to
Well, first of all, they'd pick up, they'd talk to you, or you can go into a physical bank and talk to a human.
Yeah.
And secondly, and that's a huge part of it, but secondly, it's the fact that they move a bit slower than Revolut means that they can stop the transaction kind of mid-flow. Whereas Revolut, it turns out the money's gone the second you authorise it. It's gone, gone. But they do know where it went. There is a way for them to help you get that back.
I'll tell you, if it was the Gardaí and it was a certain section of the Gardaí, if it was to do with drugs and or otherwise, they would know exactly where that money went to. And they could trace they could trace that money. Are you telling me that the Criminal Assets Bureau can't be all over Revolut like a rash if they wanted to trace money? Of course they can. I mean, the logs are there. They have to have the logs. Yeah. It just doesn't go into the ether and disappear your 10,000.
Yeah, it is possible. Now, it did go into a crypto bank, a crypto wallet. It's called Binance. So that makes it slightly harder because it becomes cryptocurrency. But people think that means it's gone. It's not. You can actually trace cryptocurrency. So I don't know.
It was a lot of money to have, mind you, in your Revolut account, wasn't it?
Yeah, well, this is the other thing people are saying to me. It turns out nobody really trusts Revolut enough to put much money in it. Now, this was a sort of a holding account for myself and my sisters because it was my dad who died a few years ago. It was his money coming in from an apartment that he owned. And so the bills were being paid out of it. It was kind of like a wallet, I suppose, shared between the four of us. But it happened to be in my name. And so, you know, in a way, I never used that Revolut account myself personally. It was just convenient. It was easier than setting up a shared AIB or Ulster Bank. So it was the convenience of it. We set it up just to let money go in and out. And it just got too high. Well, you know, as it turns out, nobody trusts Revolut to put that much money in it. But, you know, they are as secure as any other bank. You know, you could put 100 grand in it. It would be as secure as any other bank. The problem is the fraud.
Yeah.
You know, the problem is when you get tricked into it. I broke their security system, if you know what I mean. I overrode their security system. But that is exactly, that's fraud. That's the whole point.
Wouldn't you love to meet Andrew in the district court in Clifton when he's up there in handcuffs for fraud? That'd be a sight to behold, to say you scut you. You know,
I think half of Clifton would too, because I've just got so much support. People are stopping me on the street like all the time saying, I'm so sorry, you know, this is just awful. So I feel like there's a lot of support. But
do not. I mean, I got a message. Why did I get a message that I owed something to some toll somewhere that I owed? But I have a toll.
E-flow. Yeah. Everybody's getting the E-flow tax.
Well, I got it, but it says, you know, you need to top it up. But when I checked the eFlow account, there was €39 in it. They seem to take €40 out when it depletes money or whatever. So I just ignored it. You know, you're better off to ignore it rather than participate.
Well, this is it. I don't know how any kind of bank or institution or company is going to legitimately communicate with their customers, because customers now are saying, well, you're not AIB, I'm not talking to you, no way. That's not a real text. You're not a real... Now we can't even trust a real person that rings you up.
No, you can't.
And the other thing to bear in mind is people have said that Andrew could have been anybody from anywhere with an AI-generated Irish accent, and that's kind of terrifying.
Lord. You've gone too far now, Alice, if you think
I know. I know, it's too hard to even understand, isn't it?
A lot of WhatsApps coming in. Did Andrew have an Irish accent? Yes, he did from there.
You see, could I ask, actually, Keith, it's just a lot of people, there's a lot of similar scams, and people are saying, you know, it seems like this has happened to a lot of people, like I said, and they're not reporting it. I'd love if we could maybe all talk with each other. If you wanted to give any of them my phone number, I'd love to. It's just occurring to me now, like, maybe we could all share some information and it might help trace down a few people.
Somebody said, what was Alice paying for? She wasn't. She got a call from Revolut to say there was unusual activity on her account, but that Andrew, beautiful Andrew, with an Irish accent that may have been made from AI, was in a position to fix it for her, but she had to authorize the fact that, now I'll put the 5,000, yeah, we can do that, and the other 5,000, then she twigged it. But he was actually the scam artist himself. There's a lot of, Keith, I've had a lot of scam calls. And I say two very quick words when it starts, and one starts with F and the other with OBE. I believe all scams, all calls are scams if it's important. I'll eventually know when I've abused them enough. Now the caller said, Keith, I got a text too. Simple solution. Companies like Airtricity do not use mobile phones, so ignore them. Also, Dry Call, where people you have never heard of offer you investment opportunities. These scammers should face jail. And that comes from my Gertie today. Keith, there's nothing like having cash in your purse. I would hate a cashless society. All the cards are being used. They're a big draw for criminals. Somebody told me that they were at an event in Dublin recently and no cash was accepted, some big gig. No cash accepted. You had to have a card with you. There's a lot of support for you, so there is... out there, Alice.
Well, I'm glad to hear it. Yeah, I think there's been huge support. And I think it's important never to, if somebody is scammed, never to say, look, what did you do that for? Because you shouldn't be shaming the people who got robbed, you know. They're not the criminals. So, you know, it does, it really does happen. It happens all sorts of people. And it's really important that the person who got robbed doesn't feel too embarrassed to talk about it because they did nothing wrong.
Alice, thank you for joining us today. That's Alice Coyle. If you do want to be put in contact with Alice, you can do so by calling us here and we can give you her details. She's given us her permission to give her details. So if you've been in a similar scam, could we find Andrew? The hunt is on.
Galway Tolls, in association with Tesco. Find our award-winning Irish ranges in store and online at tesco.ie.
Now, on Friday evening, before we finished up, I was reading a press release which had come in from University Hospital Galway, where University Hospital Galway, UHG as we refer to it, has become the first centre in Ireland to introduce a new nerve-blocking probe which uses liquid nitrogen to freeze nerves and remove pain post-surgery. The person behind this is Dr. Alan So, consultant cardiothoracic surgeon at University Hospital Galway, and he joins me on the line today. Dr. So, good morning to you.
Good morning, how are you?
Congratulations on this. This is a major breakthrough when it comes to pain control.
Yeah, thank you very much. Yeah, very, very glad to be able to introduce this technique. It's a little bit of a serendipity, to be honest with you. How this started was that we were trying to introduce a different cardiac procedure, but the same company noticed that we are also doing a lot of lung surgery, and therefore they approached me and said, oh, by the way, we have this new devices. Would you like to kind of get involved in it and get tried? Obviously, as a clinician, you're always met with a bit of skepticism in the beginning with new devices all. Is it a gimmick? Is it true? So what we did was did a very thorough research and spoke to a lot of people. And so this is very well used in America and a lot of centers in UK already. So we were very lucky to be able to introduce this.
And effectively, Dr. So, correct me because you're the clinician in this regard, does it take the nerve that's causing the problem and just shut it out or freeze it out?
Yeah, so essentially, pain is mediated by nerves, obviously. So in lung surgery, where we are making incision into the chest and all the rest, pain is a big issue. It can lead to pneumonia, clots in lungs, heart attacks, and all the rest. So our role of surgeon is trying to do whatever we can to improve this. What we do is improve our surgical technique, like using a less invasive surgery, or the pain medicine and all. But whatever it is a big problem and it can cause people a lot of pain, so much so that it can get people hooked onto medication and all in the past, not so much these days. So this is revolutionary. What this probe does is it delivers liquid nitrogen in a very targeted area. So under direct vision, when we are doing surgery anyway, especially keyhole surgery, we can see the nerve itself hiding behind a layer of tissue. We apply this probe directly on top of the nerve. Now, this nerve, so then the probe itself delivers nitrogen at a temperature of like minus 200, I think. It freezes the nerve. The worry is that it causes permanent damage. So research has shown that it actually doesn't cause any major damage to the surrounding tissue, it just merely frees the nerve temporarily, and the effect lasts for anything between like 2 to 3 months, and then the nerve regain normal function again. So the immediate pain that people get from surgery is kind of greatly reduced. Now, I won't say it's completely eliminated, it's not possible, but it's greatly reduced. And then also what it does is not only it reduces the acute pain that you get right after surgery, but it also, some people get this post-thoracotomy pain syndrome. It's almost a little bit like a phantom pain when people get their leg amputated. Yeah. You feel the pain long time right after surgery. And this definitely reduces that for sure.
It is. I mean, that's why when I was reading on Friday afternoon when Mella sent it over to us, I just thought this is groundbreaking because you're using it in this, but it could be used in others. And the fact that it doesn't kill the nerve, it freezes the nerve, and it takes quite a while for the nerve to thaw itself out again. And at that stage, the person's in better health, hopefully. And and then the pain, if there is pain, they can deal with it from there. So it is groundbreaking for Ireland.
Yeah, it is. Yeah, well, we are fortunate enough to be the first centre to be attributed to this. As you say, we only use it for lung surgery at the moment. The company that's involved called Atricure, the one who developed these devices, they are finding that the device is very, very useful in a lot of other surgery as well. So they're slowly introducing it in heart surgery, which we are hoping to implement soon as well. And in fact, I think they're finding, because of the limitation of the device, they haven't used it on other area of chronic pain, as you mentioned, but there are research projects starting to implement that. So it is groundbreaking, as you say.
Yeah, I spoke to somebody yesterday who suffers from chronic back pain, and I said, well, this is in, it's coming in for lung and and heart. But he was saying, yeah, will I be alive when it's there? He's had it for 15 years, and they just cannot pinpoint it. But it's you know, it. Maybe in 10-15 years this will be widely used indeed, just to stop the pain, because the pain is one aspect of it, but the medication of it can cause serious trouble to stomachs and colons and other parts of the body as well.
And as you say, I think the whole idea, so in lung surgery at the moment, we use the exact same, I do the exact same thing as I previously did and use this liquid nitrogen probe as an adjunct on top of everything else I do. There are some centers in America from what I was told by the company that they have completely eliminated using pain medicine altogether. So yeah, pain, being hooked onto pain medicine. So a lot of the pain medicine that we use are still opioid based, like morphine and oxycodone and all things that people get very easily addicted to.
Yeah.
So that is a big issue, not so much in lung surgery, but can be a big issue, as you say, in back pain and all the rest. So the company, I think the device is not there yet, because at the moment it's still quite a clunky and bulky device. So it's difficult to deliver to certain smaller nerve, but I think the company is working very, very hard on it. And I will say it will come in the near, very, very near future.
How do you celebrate something like this, or do you not, Dr. Allen? So do you just go home to your family and it's just another day in the office?
More or less, like you say. And I think what is what I'm happy with is the verdict from my nurses and the patient, obviously. So on average, we've used this on about 10 patients, and all did very, very well. Their average length of stay has been reduced by at least 1 to 2 days. And more important, the patient's happy. But more importantly, I think I do the surgery, I use the device, obviously, but I think the verdict really comes from my ward nurses and my pain team who's based in the hospital, and they are very, very impressed, and hence I'm indirectly impressed because of them. They are very, very impressed with the outcome of the patients who has gone. They can see the difference from the time mm-hmm. I introduced this device. So I'm good. How do you say, I'm convinced by it, so much so that they are pestering me to give talks to other departments to use this device now.
Well, you can be the advocate for it. Dr. Alan So, talented Dr. Alan So, consultant cardiothoracic surgeon at University Hospital Galway. What a lovely story. Pain is a huge problem for a huge amount of people. This is one that Dr. So is using, so we wish others indeed the best in it, because as he alluded to there, I mean, pain medicine can wreck the body in other areas. So you get rid of the pain, but you're doped or you have too many drugs on board. It can affect your colon, your stomach, and lots of other parts of the body as well. So the future could be in the offing. Let's take a short break and we're heading to news.
Galway Talks, in association with Tesco. Click and collect allows you to collect your order whenever suits you.